listen to every single podcast on oneofus.net. What do I do now?
Well, first of all, how is that even possible? But secondly, I think I have a solution for you, Chris.
There can be no solution, Brian.
There is a solution, and that solution is our newest sponsor, Audible.com. Guys, if you haven't tried Audible.com, now is the perfect time to do that. We're talking about content that includes over 150,000 audio programs. We're talking about books on digital, audio dramas, broadcasters, magazine and newspaper publishers, all the greatest stuff you can possibly imagine in one place just for you.
Okay, that actually does sound pretty good.
Doesn't that sound great? And you know what? I'm going to make it sound even greater, Chris, because they are officially, Audible is officially one of our sponsors here at oneofus.net, and as a special gift to you guys, Audible is giving away a free audiobook. All you have to do is click on the link at the bottom of this page, or you can go to audibletrial.com/oneofus.
You mean to say that by clicking on audible.com and downloading their free book, they make sure by listening to that audio that we keep making more audio as well?
That's right, and the cycle continues.
I found out Madonna was 56 today.
That is... I was going to say fascinating, but it's kind of the opposite.
It's kind of fascinating.
Can I just say that I read somewhere in passing that apparently Madonna and Taylor Swift are going to record together, and I don't know if everybody feels
she
the way that
French kisser.
I don't know. I don't. And here's the thing.
That's something you do when you're 46,
this,
Ryan.
This is my point. I don't care. I don't care about any collaborations. Like, I think I've gotten to past the tipping point of I find that to be too remarkable that these two recording artists that are nothing alike are doing something together.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the point being is like. These collaborations, and typically it seems like they're most often they're collaborations between two artists that I don't care anything about either one of them, and there's a lot of manufactured hype around them. And anyway, I don't know. Is there a sweet spot?
I don't know, but I love how you've just run with it. It's completely changed from all I did was throw out one sentence, and Kevin's just like down this rabbit hole. It's great.
You know
what I'm going to do for the rest of the show tonight, though, because I can't stop myself now, is thinking of collaborations that, like, for example, one that I would really enjoy would be Metallica, fronted by Fred Schneider of B-52's
fame. That would be fun.
That would be a good collaboration. I would be interested in that.
I think you and I talked about if Fred Schneider had fronted Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, that smell. Didn't you smell that smell?
If I leave here tomorrow. All right. We will do this all night long. Listen, let's do the show. Let's play some music. So, Mark, are you on the air tonight?
On the air.
You are.
Mic.
All right, let's do it. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
Kevin here.
And Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It. I bartended. You know, I bartend on the side a little bit at parties.
What?
Yeah.
Does that mean that you bartend on the side of the bar, or do you stand directly behind it?
It's the sidebar.
Oh, you only bartend.
Oh, yeah. It's weirdly exclusive.
Yeah.
Last night, I got a call day before yesterday, and this woman was like, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? We need a bartender. So I show up at this place. I'm like, nothing. And I show up at this place, and there's nobody, like, other than the family. It was just completely chaotic, but it was a family of relatively well-to-do Russian Jews from Philadelphia.
That old story.
Yeah. And let me tell you,
as they are,
let's talk about the cliches that, well, we'll just talk about one cliche in particular. There were 75 people, 8 tables, and they had us place a bottle of chilled vodka on every table before the guests came and sat down. Within an hour, every bottle of vodka drunk. And much of that vodka made its way into me and my...
Well, the Russians do like their vodka. And it's not cliche for no reason. Like,
they like their vodka. And they really like proffering their vodka to...
Well, and I have a friend from Russia who moved here when she was 7, and you know what else she likes? Beets.
It's bread lines. Super into bread lines.
Really plain buildings.
There was also singing of Ava Nagila last night. I mean, it was
Was a chair lofted above?
There was a chair lofted. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Were there stern expressions?
Yes. The father looked suspiciously and eerily like Vladimir Putin, and I'm not making that up. Oh, do you have something to say?
Well, no. I was just going to ask you: were there live performances? Was there?
Was the music like the Fiddler on the Roof soundtrack?
It was like Fiddler on the Roof soundtrack. Well, yeah. I mean, there were actually musicians there playing like that stuff, like Hava Nagila, other stuff. Mm-hmm. Like the first, I didn't know really what. I knew they were Russian, but I didn't know that we were. It was a Jewish ceremony until I go outside and there's a man, there's a cantor.
Wait, did they step on a glass and the whole deal?
Yeah. That definitely happened. And okay. There was a cantor, like, singing shit about the Torah. Like, so I was
That's really fascinating.
It was fascinating. I'm telling you. We'll talk about this later off the air, but it was really an interesting thing. So we'll go from one interesting thing to another interesting thing, and that is...
For a different reason.
Yes. So that is, I picked this week's album, which is
picked.
All the Right... I chose.
Yeah, picked like a scab.
Just you picked at it.
Yeah. Well, you guys, you know, here's the thing. Well, okay, so I'll tell you the name of the album first. It's All the Right Reasons by Nickelback. And the reason why I thought of this is I heard the big single off this recently, Rockstar, which we'll get to, which I think is one of the most offensive songs I've ever heard in my life, just build up a big glitter gold cock, like, statue monument to obnoxious guys. Well, yeah, we'll get there later. But you guys never pick shitty records. And goddamn it.
Like, sorry.
So somebody's got to keep you in line. And, you know, sometimes, and I was talking with Skylar about this earlier, sometimes I'll wake up and I have to be somewhere earlier, but I'll be really hungover, or I'll just wake up and I'll be like, what? And it always, the soundtrack in the back of my head is Self by Radiohead, and the chorus is "You do it to yourself," and that was in the back of my head all the whole time
that's
I was
not
listening
the name
to
of that song.
It's what called Self,
no,
or
it's
is
called
it Else?
Just.
It's called
Oh,
Just.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah.
You know why I was thinking that? Because I was actually looking at stuff by that band Self earlier tonight that we were talking about a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I do love that song.
Yeah, it's Just. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Right, so that's
if you have to be punishing yourself with a song, it might as well be a good one.
No, I'm not punishing myself. That's the, but it's just reminding me over and over again that I did
it
to myself.
Yes.
So I mean, I guess my question is, how could you not really be into this album? I mean, it's so earnest.
It's true. Well, there's earnestness, and there's I really honestly feel like the term douchebag became popular right as a pejorative term right around the time that this album was released.
Aside from
and
the original
I definitely
compliment.
Think that
when, yeah, when was it a compliment?
I don't know. Yeah.
No. I mean, as
well,
opposed
I mean,
to an actual
implement.
Douchebag.
Yeah.
Oh, it was an implement. Right. Okay.
part of the greater lexicon.
Right. So yeah, it was really trotted out as a new.
Well, I mean, that is pretty much their demographic. Like the douchebag demographic,
without a doubt. One of my notes is, where is it?
Do you have Ed Hardy on there anywhere?
No, but that's just omnipresent. I was like, this is riding around with a bunch of dicks in a Jeep music.
Okay, well, before we go too much further, one thing that kind of struck me at the beginning, my foray into this long dark road of an album. I was reminded by a Clint Black appearance that was on, shit, I don't know, Carson or Leno or Letterman some years ago. And he told the joke, the old country music joke about what happens when you play country music
backwards. Your wife comes back, you get your truck back.
You get out of jail. Yeah. And I was like,
you quit drinking.
God, I hope you don't get your nickel back.
I was waiting for somebody to make a joke. Like, hey, I want my nickel back.
Well, Ryan and I spoke a few days ago about this record, and he gave me his assessment. Well, okay, before I get into that, let me just state for the record that normally we throw this to somebody to in the beginning of the show to talk about what their feelings on the record were, and then one by one we'll sort of all include our own opinions. And this is one where I didn't do that, and nobody complained because I'm pretty sure we're all in the same fucking boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is for the record, this was more painful for me than Slippery When Wet.
Actually, you bring up a good point. I really went into this because this is the most reviled band of our time. Like,
I hate it.
Okay, well, no, it's shitty. Don't get me wrong, but I really wanted to go into it with an open mind and try to find something good about it. So I've got a couple things. One, not as shitty as Slippery When Wet, and not as shitty as Meatloaf Bat Out of Hell.
No. Nothing's worse.
It's the third shittiest record we've listened to.
Notice I didn't go to the top. I went to the penultimate peak.
I noticed that.
I didn't go to the ultimate peak there. I can't even imagine something being worse than Bat Out of Hell. I can't.
No, it doesn't exist. It's like the
platonic.
It's the unicorn.
It's the platonic ideal
There's a mashup record for you. Nickelback doing Bat Out of Hell.
Oh God.
I'm about to bonk you on the head.
I will say this, and this isn't necessarily intended as a positive. Maybe it's a backhanded compliment, but I do think that one thing that struck me when I listened to this record was this sounds like a lot of like a certain type of popular radio these days.
Well, there's like a
it sounds like country radio.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to bring up is that to me, okay, this record is watered down, way diluted Soundgarden.
Plus
the first song for sure. Plus like watered down Tool with a like modern country radio sensibility lyrically.
There's a watered down Tool. I'll give you that for sure. You were saying this the other day when we were on the phone about Soundgarden.
The first song, for sure.
I don't hear it at all. I don't like it.
Well, and you know what? I didn't want to hear it at all.
Well, you know what? I know you.
Why don't we play a little bit of that first track? We'll see if you hear it now. We have successfully located the name of that song. I almost called it the offending song, which I guess is probably apt. It's called Follow You Home, the opening track from All the Right Reasons by Nickelback.
That right there is probably, they're telling fans right from the get-go, like, you're not going to shake us so easy. Like, this
we're going to follow you home.
We're going to follow you home. Like,
yeah.
It's a little ballsy.
So I dropped by the liquor store on the way here, and I was just kind of playing a little bit more of this record, and I was smoking, so I had my window down, and there was a guy who was like pulling up and walking up to the liquor store at the same time, and I just rolled the window up and turned it down.
Yeah.
I did not want to be seen in public listening to this.
Didn't matter what he looked like.
Oh, I didn't care. I don't want that reputation.
Like, true or false, like, it has been like categorically like Chamber of Commerce beautiful the past few days. Like,
oh,
it's
yeah.
just stunning, like low to mid 70s.
I've never heard it like termed that way. Chamber of Commerce, beautiful.
Yeah, it's like exactly what they would roll out from Central Casting if you wanted to. Like,
yeah, if like make the big wigs came to town, the president comes in town, or whatever.
Yeah,
and you have to have perfect weather.
Let's dial that up. So that would be what it has looked like. And anyway, so it's not unusual that I'll like kind of put the sunroof back and like on my drive home as I listen
and
to these
blast
records.
Nickelback.
And I was like, I just can't do it. Like, I've got to listen to some of this.
Like, you have a disease or something.
Well, yeah. It's like, it's kind of like what I imagine that people, you know, how they treat Weird Al to his face, you know?
Go on.
It's like, you know, a friend of mine once characterized Weird Al Yankovic as that guy who thought he was funny in high school, but everybody else just sort of felt sorry for him.
Well, you know what? That guy had the number one album last year.
I mean, I don't know if it was, and you know what? Nickelback has sold an obscene amount of records, but I'm pretty sure that Weird Al Yankovic has sold more.
Well, and you know what? Obscene is the right word to use there.
Everything about this band is somewhat obscene. Well, so we touched on this for a minute. I don't see the Soundgarden. I mean, I guess I kind of do after listening to the
song.
It's
just a little bit, like a kind of a tension filled, and it, granted, like way diluted, watered down Soundgarden.
Right.
But I could tell that like it's probably an influence. And
well, definitely. I mean, you can definitely hear that. I just don't find necessarily a correlation in sound. Like I said before, there's pathos, there's ganas in Soundgarden, whether you like them or not. This just sounds harsh and crystalline, like the production.
Yeah,
it's very, very, very brittle, and not a great drummer.
Do we know if this is the original drummer? Because I read up a little bit, and they got their drummer from another shitty band.
No, Three Doors Down.
Yeah.
But he's the
Wait, he lived Three Doors Down?
Marcus, back on the mic. No, this is their fourth drummer, and he was previously the Three Doors Down drummer, which I have heard of that band before, but I don't know that I know any of their songs.
Superman.
Yeah,
it's in the same vein of shit.
That's pretty horrible, too. So this is my favorite thing, though, about Nickelback. Their first drummer was, I think there were three brothers in the band, three Krogers. And their first drummer, he left the band, was replaced. Their second drummer quit about a year before they broke the shit wide open to become a car salesman. You think that guy fucking kicks himself in the ass
probably
every
does.
Day?
Well, and here's the thing. I saw some deal, and I don't know if it was 60 Minutes, but it was a 60 Minutes like piece.
Nickelback?
Yeah, I don't know if 60 Minutes would bring themselves down to that level, but it was a journalistic piece, and they don't give a shit that people don't like them. Like, they know about it. And they don't give a shit. Like, they're laughing all the way to the bank.
Did you read that? So I know that both you and I read pieces on longform.org.
That's true.
The reason why I got interested, or at least, this is one of these bands that I dislike very much, and this listening to this album has reinforced that. But also, they're sort of ubiquitous, so they just fade into the background for
To me, they were instantly familiar. Like, I don't actually know any of these. I didn't know any of these songs
before. You didn't know the Rockstar song?
I did not know it. It was instantly familiar, but instantly forgettable. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. I feel like I've probably heard these songs somewhere, but they don't stick on the hard drive, which is good.
It feels like this would be a good time to share a little snippet from a review.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Because I'm about to get in a long conversation with Ryan.
Yeah, and there's sort of, like, again, there's a lot of fertile ground here, but I'm pulling this from the All Music take on this record, and one of the things that they mention is sort of the evolution is not really the right word, but the
devolution.
Well, the movement from one album to another, and sort of how this band looks at themselves and how they perform on this album. And this guy says, sure, they stretch a little bit, but they still favor clumsy, plodding riffs. Still incessantly rewrite the same chords and melody. Still harmonize exactly the same way on every song. Kroger still sounds like he's singing with a hernia. He still writes shockingly stupid lines that make you long for the days of such subtle double entendres as "she's using her head again," such as "she'd be pissed if she could see parts of you that I've been kissing," etc., etc., etc. So
they're consistent.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, sure. And he says, and despite the attempted sarcasm of Rockstar, he still shows no discernible sense of humor, and that's fascinating.
It's not just no discernible sense of humor. So here's the interesting thing about him, and get back to that long form piece that I was reading. He is convinced, and actually the sales have borne him out, like, that he has a mathematical...
You said, yeah, he thinks he perfected...
He's perfected, mathematically perfected the way to write a hit pop song. And he has... The one thing about the guy, I'll give him this, but this is just the American in me that says this. There's really no value in just constantly multitasking. But he works with a lot of bands. He does a lot of co-writing. He does a lot of producing. I believe he has a label. He does a lot of merchandising. He's
guys work hard.
He's tireless.
Yeah.
But he, I guess I was in that long form article. It talks about like how a bunch of his pet bands, he's written songs for them, and a lot of those have become hits. I mean, he is completely convinced that he's found a formula for the. But of course, with any formula, you know, give it 5 to 10 more years, and it'll be completely obsolete.
Well, and here's the other thing I kind of wanted to that occurred to me as I was listening to this record. I think had I heard this 20 years ago, it would have pissed me off. Like I cared about music so much in that way that only like when you're pretty young you can.
Pat Oswalt talks about that.
Yeah, and I can't raise the kind of ire that I would have had for it back then. And here's the other thing: dumb people need music too. I don't have to listen to it.
No, dumb people need to listen to better music. You just gave a free pass to whatever fucking idiotic Adam Sandler movie or whatever stupid. I mean, it's.
Look at it.
Somebody enjoyed this.
Look, that's a bumper sticker. I love that idea for a bumper sticker, but that's a bullshit idea to give a free pass to.
I'm not necessarily giving them a free pass. They do suck, and I don't want them in my life. And after tonight, they won't be.
Okay, I'll tell you here. Yeah, likewise. Maybe not though. Maybe I'll pick another one in the future. But if this doesn't get your ire up about this man, I don't know what will. Nickelback is the second best-selling foreign act in the United States in the 2000s.
I know where you're
after
going.
Only the Beatles.
Yep,
that's depressing.
Okay, so maybe your ire went sideways, or it went back.
I read that too.
Yeah, and the thing that I thought was kind of most interesting about the Beatles
were the Beatles are still selling.
Yeah,
like, more than anybody else.
Broken up more than anybody else.
Yeah. But yeah. But anyway, I don't know. I think, you know, to Ryan's point, and I frankly think you're both kind of right. But to Ryan's point, you know, one of the things that I remember hearing back in the day was like, if you think about it, like, stupid people, there's no all the pressure's off. You just walk out into the street and get hit by a mayonnaise truck, then like. That's exactly what people expect.
I don't think I've ever seen a mayonnaise truck, but I want to now.
I really wish I would see a mayonnaise truck just go and plow into a stupid person.
And I don't know if that's a truck made of mayonnaise or a truck carrying mayonnaise. But still, the idea being that like stupid people do stupid shit. But I do think like on a more serious note, like there is, and speaking of the mathematical formula or whatever, this guy unlocked something that there is a certain strata of the population that went, yes, I whatever that is, play me something exactly like that
right.
A lot on every record.
Well, and the other thing that kept coming back to me as I researched for this or listened to this record was, and I may have brought this up on the podcast before, but there's a P.T. Barnum quote where he says, nobody ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public.
Yep.
Can I just briefly interject here. I'm perusing their Wikipedia page, and I'm just going to read you this two sentence.
Nugget.
Also, the band spent much of 2006 and 2007 touring across the globe. The band opened for Bon Jovi on the European leg of the tour.
That sounds about right.
Good God.
You know, I didn't know that before I chose this record.
You know, well, and I wonder if it's one of those deals, like, it would be,
a karmic thing for you?
I wonder if it would be, like, you know, like, the old, and I mean this in a strictly apolitical sense, like, the old Phil Hartman impression of Reagan, where he was a doddering idiot in public, and then they would...
Oh, as soon as the Girl Scout leaves the room?
Then he was a brilliant mastermind. Like, yeah. I wonder if those two bands got together on tour, and they're like, everybody hates us except for all the people who keep showing up and giving us lots of money.
Bon Jovi, made the most money out of any rock band last year.
Last year?
Are you kidding me?
I'm completely serious. You know, I heard it on Sound Opinions.
Hey, we talked about Rockstar a minute ago. There's no way you don't know this song. It's okay. Can we say this? Can we say this? Of course we can. Can I say this on the air? Can I be frank?
I think the
here?
FCC is going to come down on us.
Yeah, I don't think that they give a shit. There was. I'm making notes. I'm listening to this, and this started happening to me where I. Like, I kept, like, getting impatient, and I realized that I had a lot of anxiety and anger. And then I realized what was going on, so I made this note. About halfway through this record, I started getting physically angry. I had to keep listening to it.
This is definitely one I was totally relieved to get to the end.
All right, so Rockstar. I think we should play Rockstar. It's the big one. We're going to come back and you can castigate me some more. And Ryan, you have a few minutes with this week, right?
I do.
All right, we don't know what it is, but we'll come back and you tell us.
I do.
Yeah, hopefully. Thank you. Yeah.
Do it. Play it.
I'm through with standing in line. The clubs I'll never get in. It's like the bottom of the ninth, and I'm never gonna win this. Life hasn't turned out quite the way I want it to be.
Tell me what you want.
I want a brand new house on an episode of Cribs, and a bathroom I can play baseball in, and a king size tub big enough for 10 plus me.
For what you need.
I'll need a credit card that's got no limit, and a big black chain with a bedroom in it. Gonna join the Mile High Club at 37,000 feet.
Been done.
I want a new tour bus full of old guitars. My star on Hollywood Boulevard. Somewhere between Cher and James Dean is fine for me.
So how you gonna do it?
I'm gonna trade this life for fortune and fame. I'd even cut my hair and change my name. Cause we all just wanna be big rock stars and live in hilltop buses driving 15 cars.
One of the things that I read indicated that that song is written ironically, but it also struck me when I was listening to it that that band probably has most of that shit, and they're probably singing literally to their fans.
Yeah, but, I mean, even if it were written ironically,
yeah,
they have a shitty sense of irony, number one.
Sure.
It's not funny.
No.
And number two, the fucking people that they want to sell it toward. I mean, if they were to say that they wrote it ironically, they're full of shit, and they just realize how ridiculous idiots they finally they woke up and realized.
Well,
that.
The thing that strikes me about this act, and I don't mean it just because they suck, is that it's hard to root for them. And so I just find myself, like, it's one of these deals
where,
like,
suck and they're really successful at sucking.
Well, and not, it's more than that. It's like, it's they're obnoxious. Like a little bit on top of it, it's like there's this sheen of entitlement.
That's the thing. Okay, yeah, when you say entitlement,
yeah,
that's why, like, again, like, why, I don't know if I said this.
It's what I'm going to call my first album, by the way, Sheen of Entitlement.
Sheen of Entitlement.
And I'll have a picture of Charlie Sheen.
Of course you will.
Dad humor.
Oh, my God.
Again, I wrote some notes, and one of the notes, I wrote, Rockstar is one of the most offensive songs I've ever heard, and it is, because even if they say that, or even if Chad Kroeger says, well, this is ironic, the people that are fucking cranking up
they're not taking it that way.
They're mudding out in their four wheelers.
You're exactly right with that, by the way. This is a mudding crowd.
This is a mudding crowd. You're right.
Yeah. They drive.
Should we say, I mean, I'm sure that people everywhere know what mudding is, but should we say it for the listeners that aren't in Texas?
Oh, sure, yeah.
It's going out, yeah, where there are no roads, and you just take your truck out there and tear some shit up.
Or Jeep. Yeah, like you, yeah. Basically you do donuts in heavily saturated soil.
That's heavily saturated soil.
That's more geologic than I've ever heard it described before, but yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I tried.
By the way, there is no G in mudding.
It's in apostrophe.
Did I ever say mudding?
No.
People are going mudding. No, I did not say that. But this is
going mudding. Those words have never been spoken.
Hey, y'all.
I said good day.
I said good day, sir. Enough about Nickelback. Brian, what are we listening to for a few minutes with tonight?
Well, I wanted to kind of do something that wasn't like Nickelback. I picked Precision Auto by Superchunk.
Oh, I thought that is not like Nickelback. For a second, when you said Precision Auto, I just thought about the O'Reilly's theme song.
O'Reilly's.
Got
Kevin, that music does bring me great joy.
It does, me too. I don't
know, we know it brings you great joy.
Knocked it out of the park with that one.
It's been almost a year, and every week we have to listen to the music. It's so good. It's honestly, I think why it's so good is because that clip is so short, leaves you wanting more.
Well, and that's the way to do it. You leave them wanting more.
Apparently so.
Yeah. You know what else brings me great joy?
What?
Superchunk, Precision Auto. As opposed to,
O'Reilly's.
Say, well, O'Reilly's is one, but as opposed, I wanted to get something as far away from Nickelback as I could get.
It's pretty far away.
I feel like in the greater context of this recording, of this podcast, this is probably a small Band-Aid on a greater wound, but still. Like,
yeah.
I'm pleased
to
enjoy it.
We probably need a tourniquet, but we've got like a little strip of Curad instead.
Sure. Yeah. Here, put some Curcum on it. That'll fix it.
I'm just going to tiny bit tease this, but next week I'm doing a current affair, but the week after I'll be doing a few minutes with. And I have picked for that song, It's Far Away As You Can Get from Nickelback. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but.
Okay.
Is it Sammy Davis Jr.?
No, but you're not far away.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Anyway, Ryan, so Superchunk is, for all of their accolades, they might be best known as the band that spawned Merge Records. And they're from the North Carolina Triangle. And if you've spent any time in the Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill, Cary, which is actually where that label is located, which is kind of like right in the middle of all three of the others.
I know that.
Well, because I've been there.
He like in a former job that was part of his.
Oh,
territory.
Yeah, right.
But
right,
I've
right,
been
right,
to the.
Right,
but
right.
I and one of my and we won't go down. This will be a divergent path. But I just happened to be there on George Harrison's birthday. There were all of these like one of these Austin deals where you get a lot of these guys together who've been playing music for 40 or so years, and they're like these, Austin Troubadour types. North Carolina has those too, and they all got together and played George Harrison songs on George Harrison's birthday, and it was in the bar where Superchunk does a lot of their shit. And so I went in that bar because I wanted to see where Superchunk, like, where their home base is. But I actually ended up catching this really neat thing. And so anyway, it's like, I like that whole area is like, I used the phrase central casting earlier. Like, that's kind of like what that area is like. It looks like
it's
put together.
Well, it was Slacker Central. It was sure. Austin and, like, North Carolina back in the
90s. It's beautiful. It's fun. It's a fun.
It is.
Well, and isn't that where you found Funkle Sam?
It is. Yes.
Were they in Asheville or were they in the Triangle?
In Asheville. So he's right about North Carolina. They weren't in the Triangle. But, yes, it was in North Carolina where I encountered the poster. And unfortunately, not the band Funkle Sam, but the poster.
Sorry,
for
you missed
Funkle
that, man.
Yeah. So, okay. Why don't we
play some?
Why don't we let everybody listen to this Superchunk song, and we'll discuss
this
it.
This is Precision Auto. Yeah, that's a little bit of Precision Auto by Superchunk, a song that, like many of my now favorite songs, I first saw on 120 Minutes on MTV. I remember specifically watching TV in the Castilian. You remember the Castilian chain?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was right around when we became friends.
Yeah.
That University of Texas talk?
It's a private.
It's like
dorm.
Off-campus housing.
Yeah, okay. It's a dormitory. But
I did
it's
a lot
a
of
nice
LSD.
That's a college story alert for those of you listening.
Yeah, but yeah.
Whoa, college boys.
It's like two blocks from UT. I could just walk to class or whatever. But anyway, I remember specifically watching 120 Minutes in like the lounge area and seeing this video and just thinking, this is fucking genius. And I bought the record, too, which is kind of hit and miss.
Underwhelming for you?
It was for me. I was hoping for more of this, and I got a lot of that sort of slacker mentality that was going around at that time.
So, again, without going too far down the deep end, one little other thing about this record was back in the day, there was a gal that I worked with who worked out of that out of the Triangle area who gave me, who came to the job that she was working in from publishing. And I think it's Algonquin Book Publishers has an arm in the North Carolina Triangle. And so anyway, Merge Records put out a book about the history of Merge Records. And one of the things that I remember about that book, specifically about the Superchunk part, was that Laura, when she would play bass, would pogo.
Yeah, it's Mac McCoffin and Laura. Yeah. I don't remember her last name, but I think they were a couple. Was that
they
right?
were.
They were, and they're not anymore. And she actually, I think, is kind of more instrumental in that in Merge Records being
is
a success.
It? Is she?
Well, at the very least, she did a lot of the bookkeeping stuff and like really kept them afloat.
Merge has got Spoon,
Arcade Fire.
Yeah, they really turned into something.
Like when that label first started up, I was like, oh, it's just a vanity label to put out Superchunk Records. But no, they're the real deal. It's like along with like Matador and Sub Pop, like one of the big indie labels.
But there, you remember last week when Marcus was here, we were talking about Bella Union. They have like so many amazing bands on.
It's a similar situation.
As a vanity label, even though they didn't put out their own records.
Yeah.
But they really did a good job of going out there. I think there's a lot to be said for people that are talented musicians if they have the interest and if they have the time to go and look for
recruit up and coming artists and use their sway to.
Well, I think there's something to be said. Like I would trust a really good music. I would trust Johnny Marr than I would some nameless faces A&R guy to sign a band.
You know, one of the reasons one of the things that they cover in that book is that one of the reasons that label ended up doing well, so part of it was because they represented acts that they really thought were worthwhile, and they had a good ear and more business sense perhaps than a lot of some musicians do. But beyond that, you know, it was just that there were some certain things that were broken about the way that record contracts were put together, and they just decided to do it differently, and so. You know, it was kind of a confluence of being in the right place at the right time.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Merge does the 50-50 split thing with all of their artists, which has been adopted by a lot of indie labels at this point. But it's basically
they weren't the first to do it.
After expenses, all the profits get split between the label and the artist, which is totally fair.
Sure.
And something that none of the major labels do.
Yeah.
No, of course not.
And so if you've been around for a while and you have a good reputation with the artists that are working with you, and those artists are moving more units, like it's sort of the water rises for everybody. So good for them. But anyway, but this is the thing that I was going to mention, which has nothing to do with that book, except for the fact that they talked about the fact that when Laura would play bass, that she would pogo up and down. And so that's what I found myself watching for in that video, was to see the little girl on the bass who was pogoing up and down, and she didn't really do it. So it's unfortunate.
A very beautiful woman.
Yeah, there wasn't much of her in that video, which we should talk about that song. But,
yeah, you know what? And that was something I was going to say. I was just going to sum it up succinctly. Punky, short, early 90s indie rock.
Yeah,
sounds
totally.
Good to me.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I mean, it was great.
I mean, sweet spot.
Great song. Like, this, you know.
It kind of has that taut energy to it, and a lot of like sort of grainy footage of cars.
I kind of feel about
fisheye lens,
right? Fisheye lens. I kind of feel about Superchunk the same way that I do like bands like Jawbox. Great bands, but better when taken as a whole. Like I feel like the albums matter more than individual songs.
I'm the exact opposite, actually.
Really?
I bought this record and I liked a couple songs on it, but like this is the one that stands out to me.
But I see what you're saying. But you I think you maybe I misspoke. What I mean is their legacy is defined more by the records than there are. Like, so for example, like the Ramones, you could take different songs off of all of these records, and they would stand alone as songs. You don't think of the records as records. But Superchunk is one of those bands, like for better or for worse, I feel like they're more of an album band. I mean, it's just whether you like the whole album or not. I mean, this is a great song.
I get what you're saying.
I think that the impact is greater for a lot of early to mid 90s bands.
Yeah. They are kind of one of those bands that kind of ruined it for a lot of music fans like me, in that they inspired a lot of crappy bands. And they were good. They were one of the good ones, but like they did, you know, along with Pavement and Guided by Voices, like inspired a lot of people to think that they could just hit play on or hit record on the Tascam.
Well, you got to go all the way back to the Beatles, man, if you're going to start that conversation.
Well, let's not.
Yeah.
Only we should at some point.
I kind of want to keep talking about this so we don't have to talk about.
No, we've talked about this enough. Great song. Like, I think I summed it up. It's succinct. It's poppy, it's indie, early 90s, great song. Thank you for playing it. It was
It was counter-programming.
What this was? It was sort of like the amuse-bouche. Like, it was like a little... After we just ate a really shitty meal, moving on to the second course, we just had a little bit of sorbet to cleanse our palate.
And unfortunately, there's a third course that we now have to get back to.
Well, we don't have to belabor the point. I think we've definitely made... We've said what we have to say about
labor is the right word to use, though. So let's get back into Nickelback. Yeah, so the important thing about that is that it's a reminder to everybody of the production value of this show. And
really, really high.
Yes.
Hey, now.
we didn't mean to say that with you in the room.
Yeah, no. If anything, it's better because of producer Mark.
That is true.
Speaking of things that are produced and perhaps in some cases overly so, let's talk a little bit about Rolling Stone's take on this record.
I know that you look up a lot of reviews when we
I look outside. I'm surgical about it.
Were there any good reviews?
There were some. And frankly, I found them short-sighted.
Amazing.
Yeah, but I will say that like there was a great variance. So
think of the publication that would give this a good review. Like it would have to be one that it stuck to their demo. Like Circus, maybe like a metal.
It might have
been
Entertainment Weekly. Didn't hate it. Like it was something that was like very, very mainstream publication.
For the
yeah. Just the pinnacle of mediocrity type situation. And frankly, to that point, probably less so of really what the they're going to be more about film and TV than they are
about
music.
Really their...
Shane's rejoined us, but anyway, here's the deal. So
I asked him if anybody gave it a good review, and he thinks Entertainment Weekly did.
Entertainment Weekly gave him a B.
So some folks did, but I mean, essentially where we netted out is like I thought, frankly, the more interesting reviews were some that I felt like judged it a little bit more harshly, and not because difficult reviews are inherently more interesting, but because I think that's frankly kind of what this album deserves. So anyway, here's a little bit. Here's a nugget from Rolling Stone's take on this Nickelback album, and they said Nickelback's fifth disc consists of 11 giant chorus songs about prisons of the mind, wanting to be a rock star, and how it's hard to up and leave when she's going down on you. The band's wordy hooks and big riffs are as meticulously arranged as a $1,000 nativity scene, but with the exception of the sleekly rocking quote animals. And some hope and faith platitudes, all the right reasons is so depressing, you're almost glad Kurt's not around to hear it.
Ouch.
Yeah. So they did that, which I didn't see anybody else do, which was they took both sides of the coin, which is like real earnestness versus faux earnestness.
Right. And I do think that this band was the product, or at least their, prominence or their signing and prominence was like, if you took Nirvana And then, like, a lot of stuff got signed in their wake that wasn't nearly as good, and it kept getting shittier as it would go down from generation to generation.
Candlebox.
Idiocracy. Yeah, it's kind of the idiocracy.
But it sounds less grunt. See, you keep saying this, like, it to me, like, I can definitely hear the affinity for, I'm sure those guys loved that stuff when they were growing up, but it sounds more like country music, modern country music,
absolutely,
sung with a grungy Days of the New type singer. That's what it sounds like to me.
It's
like I don't hear anything. Like, I would love to AB, like right now we could put like on, like listen to one of their bright, shiny, brittle pop songs and AB it with like a Alice in Chains song or a Soundgarden song. This stuff is dark. Grunge was dark. Or it was grungy.
Mm-hmm.
This is not grungy.
No, this is shiny, clean. Shiny and polished, the but fucking, wishes it was grungy.
Exactly. The fucking dude that listens to this music. Oh, by the way, can you guys hear that? Like, I'm banging my finger on the table and all the glasses and bottles are ringing out.
All
Sunday
right, special
cheer.
Kid. Let's get back
yeah,
on track.
I know. So, yeah. Thank you. So this album is far be it from being grungy. It's the album that the dude that washes his pickup truck and details it himself every Sunday. This is what he's listening to while he's washing his fucking pickup truck.
Because he's been mudding.
Well, yeah.
Because he was out yeah. mudding. Yeah.
So I forgot about this when I said I didn't have much more to say. We haven't even...
You always have much more to say. I don't know what you're talking about.
Thank you.
Except right now.
Anyway, like,
no. Listen, I said I have a few things that I want to comment on. We haven't gotten into Chad Kroeger's fixation with oral sex.
That pops up. No pun intended.
Oh yeah, thank you. We haven't gotten into his lyrics yet, and so I want to read.
Neither has he.
Yeah. Right.
So this album is called All the Right Reasons. And there's a song on it called Fight for All the Wrong Reasons. And I kind of think I know where he's going, what he means in the song. It's just, it doesn't mean anything. Like, I understand that he... Okay, let me just read you some of the lyrics. But I will stop and reread the line where it gets into him getting oral sex from her.
Fellated,
as it were. Okay, so lyrics go, well, I wanted you, I wanted no one else. I thought it through, I got you to myself. You got off every time you got on to me. This guy, by the way, is Bob Dylan.
Oh, big time.
I got caught up in favorable slavery. Was it wrong? Was it wrong? Chorus. I guess... Wait. You start...
The facial expression on that.
It gets even better. Was it wrong? Was it wrong? Chorus. I guess it wasn't right. I guess it wasn't meant to be. It didn't matter what they said because we were good in bed.
Shane has literally been shrugging his way through these lyrics.
He actually shrugged. Well, he actually shrugged on that line.
But he talks.
What bums me out about this shit is I guarantee you that. Hang on. Let me finish this real quick. I guarantee you that at some of their concerts, people are like singing along to this, like it's profound.
Some of their concerts,
wisdom.
All of their concerts, they've sold 50 million. They have sold more records in the 2000s than any foreign band than the Beatles. A lot of people are singing. A lot of women that have really weird tattoos, like tiny little sun tattoos they got on their ankle in the early 90s. Oh, this is in the chorus. My stomach hurts from laughing. It says, no, it didn't matter what I tried. It's just a little hard to leave when you're going down on me.
Man, that's some profound
it's,
shit right
well,
there.
It's fucking but that's, Dylan. I told you.
Yeah.
It's well, actually kind of accurate. I mean, just
sure.
Physiologically. Yeah.
Physiologically, it is accurate.
It is hard
him,
to.
I just have this image of him going like, hey.
Yeah, I'm gonna take off now.
I'm double parked. If you could
you could take my penis out of your mouth. That'd be great.
Oh, good.
Yeah, can I just so all of these reviewers, like you're reading some reviews, and I was earlier, and they're talking about how morose and how he doesn't have a sense of humor, and in my mind, I'm like, who cares? Like it's look at the dude. Like, look at his weird bleached blonde afro thing going on. Like, of course he doesn't have a sense of humor. Do you know what he is? I'm going to read you the lyrics to another song on this record.
I knew this day would come.
This is this guy. So this song is called Next Contestant. And I couldn't figure out in the beginning of the song if he's talking about, well, you'll know what he's talking about. The guy's hitting on his girlfriend.
It's some chick.
No, he's talking about guys hitting on his girlfriend. Mm. And initially, in fact, I'm pretty sure what the overall arc of the song is that his girlfriend is a stripper, and men and women are hitting on her. But then he keeps talking about the clothes she wore. So I think he's mixing his, not metaphors, but
dude, you're just putting that joke that was going around L.A. in the 80s in my head now, and I have to say it because you brought up all the pertinent stuff, but it was, what does a stripper do to her asshole before she goes to work?
Oh, God.
Drops him off at band practice.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it was apt.
Yeah, it was.
I'll cue up a rim shot for you on that.
Thank you. Please.
Oh, my God. Oh.
I will say this, and this is like, so we've been talking a lot about how much we've been sidebarring tonight, and one thing that I think is empirically true is that we're sidebarring because it keeps us from talking about this record.
Oh, like, God damn. Well, I knew there was, I mean, there's some validity in what you've just said, and when you guys are real, and I truly believe that, and you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
But I tell you, I will tell you this. I know how much you dislike this record, Kevin.
Uh-huh.
I know you don't dislike this record as much as me, but I know you dislike it. I dislike it more than all three of you put together. Like, so.
Well, you think that the Bon Jovi record was better than this. And
yes,
I disagree.
It is.
I disagree. Not by
You're
much.
Totally
I mean,
wrong.
It's a fucking neck and neck horse
I
race,
think
but.
Sometimes it's good to at least experience something that's unpleasant. To know that that's not something that you ever want to experience.
Well, it makes
again.
You appreciate what you actually like more.
Yeah,
you know that there's
complete
steaming piles of shit out there.
Yeah,
that
it's
you
just,
could be
and it's not like this. It's not playing the cool card either. Like it's literally a piece of shit.
So I want to read you the lyrics to Next Contestant, and just remember that I'm pretty sure his girlfriend in the story that he's telling is a stripper. But that doesn't make any sense right off the bat. I judge by what she's wearing just how many heads I'm tearing. That's the first two lines.
I judge
by what she's wearing.
Yeah.
Off of assholes coming on to her, each night seems like it's getting worse. And I wish she'd take the night off so I don't have to fight off every asshole coming on to her. It happens every night she works. You're a fucking bad boyfriend, asshole. They'll go and ask the DJ, find out just what she would say. How the DJ knows that, we're unclear. If they all tried coming on to her, don't they know it's never going to work? They think they'll get inside her with every drink they buy her. As they all try coming on to her, this time someone's getting hurt. Here comes the next contestant. Is that your hand on my girlfriend? Is that your hand? I wish you'd do it again. I'll watch you leave here limping. Like I said earlier, that Rockstar was one of the most offensive songs I've ever heard. Actually, rereading this, this is one of the most offensive things I've ever heard in my life. Like, you start to...
Well, hey, idiot, don't date a stripper if you're going to get jealous. Like that's their job.
Later in the lyrics, I don't have all the lyrics here, but they. Actually, now I do. Internet, who knew? He talks about. Also, there's women that think she's hot too, and they want to hook up with her, and I'm okay with that.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, it's just nonsensical.
It's like paint by numbers bullshit. Like,
no, but
like,
but this. I mean, you're right about the paint by numbers musically, but this thing actually, it's. Incredibly offensive. Like, she's his possession. It bothers me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay. I mean, I don't disagree with your offense, like taking offense, but I also think it's just frankly not that original. Like, I just think it's a given, like, troglodyte mindset that, like, there are guys like that that sound exactly like that, that say and do shit like that. Like, it just sounds like...
Right, I know, but to put that into a song, to crystallize that into a popular song, it's so offensive. I'm reading these lyrics, and they're bothersome to me.
Well, okay, so here's the deal. We should probably play...
No. We can't before I have one more thing to say. Okay. I have one more. This is the most offensive group of lines. This is the most offensive stanza in this whole song. So misogynistic and so bad. Well, listen to the song, but... Okay, four lines. I'm hating what she's wearing. Everybody here keeps staring. Fuck you, Chad Kroeger. Can't wait till they get what they deserve. This time somebody's getting hurt. That's fucking offensive.
Like, hey, asshole, go meet a girl at church.
I just find none of that even surprising. Like,
it's not surprising, but it doesn't mean that we should give him a free pass for being a douchebag.
I don't think he gets a free pass. I just think that it's like sort of
pretty free pass. He sold 50 million records. This is their highest selling record.
That doesn't sound free to me. I mean,
there are plenty of douchebags that want to buy douchebag music made by douchebags.
But why are you giving him a pass? Like, there, that is.
I don't think I'm giving him a pass. I just don't want it in my life.
I think, yeah,
and it's going to exist.
If you turn a blind eye to fucking.
What do you want to start a rally?
No, I don't want to start a rally. Just don't be so dismissive. I mean, when he's saying,
"Dude, I gotta pick my battles."
He's basically, essentially saying in that line that that woman is his property.
Yeah, but what
he's a total fucktard.
What do 25-year-old douchebags do? Like, they say stupid shit like
he's
that.
He's not 25. He
what do 35, 45, 55-year-old douchebags do?
Like, he's essentially stating in this incredibly. Yeah. They sold 8 million copies of this record. He's stating that this woman is his property, and it's bullshit, and it's not only...
Yeah, and I'm not going to support them at all.
I knew that you would say that. But, okay, so I'm wrapping it. Not only is it... Sorry, I got on my high horse for a second. Not only is it bullshit, it's just shitty music, and that's what we're here to
talk
about.
All right, let's play another clip of shitty music.
We're
going to
play a clip
off
this song.
I judge by what she's wearing, just how many heads I'm tearing off of assholes coming on to her. Each night seems like it's getting worse. I wish she'd take the night off so I don't have to bite off every asshole coming on to her. It happens every night she works. They'll go and ask the DJ to find out just what would she say if they all tried coming on. Contestant.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ari Povich, and welcome to this special edition of A Current Affair.
Much bandied about that popped up on some of the acts that you should see at South by Southwest this past year was a Kiwi band from New Zealand called the Brunettes. And this was
you just served up a big bowl of cereal.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah. That song, that video is something in and of itself. Like, everybody
it
should
is.
Go watch the video. But disassociate yourself from the video, that is a great song.
Oh, it's a good song.
Yeah,
that
sure.
is diametrically opposed to
Tell
everything
everyone.
We've been listening. I have the hook, the female hook.
Yeah.
The call and it's like a call and response thing. There's like sort of a twee pop thing going on in it.
Sure.
Certainly.
Kevin, tell everyone the name of the song.
Yeah, the name of the song is Red Roller Skates. And essentially, the gist of the video, the gist of the video is, like Shane was saying, it's kind of a call and response type song. Basically, this guy sees a mannequin in the window and fancies her and imagines that she's real in a way. And then,
well, no, she's real. She's always real.
Well, of course.
But
anyway,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm sorry to, like,
imagines her in the John Hughes mannequin sense. And anyway, and part of the lyrical content of the song is that he pulls her around on red roller skates, and she is his girlfriend. And the thing that I thought was really interesting about this video, aside from a lot
the
of
80s
its
production values,
yes, the 80s production values, the fact that it had like ghosted cats in the background, was that the mannequin dumps him in the end.
Well, but the funny thing about the mannequin dumping him, so that they're sitting across from a table at like an IHOP or something, and like she tells him, I just don't think you're the guy I need or I want or whatever.
She said, I just want to have fun.
I just
want to
have fun.
Yeah.
And then he's like, you know.
He's all defensive. He's like, yep.
He's like, yep. And he's, you know, and then he walks away from the table, and the mannequin sheds one tear. Like she, like
so she is real.
She no, it's that she didn't want to tell him that. She didn't. She just, you know, she was in love. I don't know. Whatever. It's very surreal.
Deep shit.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. But so I thought it would be fun to kind of unpack, maybe literally in the case of a mannequin, one of these songs from a band that just was here, and I happen to be like a I happen to be a big sucker for
mannequin-based videos.
Mannequin-based videos from New Zealand, yeah. and it did strike me as like kind of an interesting counterpoint that not only to what we've been talking about, but also that this is not. It doesn't sound like every other New Zealand band that's out there. It's not Jangle Pop. It's not. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
was great. I love that song.
Like, it's fun.
What was the label? Flying Nun.
Flying Nun, which is still around.
The Bats are on Flying Nun.
Bats, Chills,
the Chills,
Verlaine,
yeah.
Well, the Bats and the Chills were
wow,
two that
you
got.
Wow, you know way more Australian and New Zealand bands than
mm-hmm.
you should. That's crazy.
Kevin's actually
straight,
the king
straight
of that
jacket
stuff.
Fits. Like,
straight jacket fits. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, like,
that's
I had one of those records. It was very good.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So it was just it's a little self indulgent, but it was my opportunity to go down that path because these guys were apparently just
well.
Here.
And you and I went to a. I'm looking at Shane here. We went to a what's his nuts from Crowded House.
Ooh.
Oh,
Neil Finn.
We went to a Neil Finn show.
Yeah,
and his
and
son
it
was
brilliant.
Yeah, it was
and
great.
His son was playing guitar.
His son was playing guitar. He was
wow,
like 16
yeah, that
at
was,
the time.
That was
yeah.
bright.
Liam.
Yeah, that was
I saw a Liam show at South by a few
I've
years
heard
ago.
I've heard he's doing really cool things.
He opened, and actually I saw him separately. He opened for Wilco here. So like that guy
yeah,
is like,
I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that guy's doing fine.
Good to have a famous rock star for a dad.
It does. It helps.
Well, but the thing about Neil Finn that's always interesting is that he was able to, and this is something we'll talk, we should.
The Seven Worlds Apart stuff, like where he brought in a lot of those guys from all over the world.
Seven Worlds Apart, yeah. But he always does this thing that I really like, and that he's amenable to people that enjoy power pop, but he has a lot more heart and soul than a lot of power pop stuff does. Sure. I think the word power pop, like people that are into that, it's sort of like a, like the people that listen to power pop, you know, air quotes, or could be really good friends with the people that listen to prog rock. They're like, no.
It's a lot
no.
more economical.
No, not that they listen to the same kinds of music, in that power pop can be one of this like, like we were talking earlier today about Chad Kroeger, like, I found the formula for pop music.
You That's say what, power pop, I just think big star, beginning and the end.
No, but there are a lot of, we'll talk about this later, but there are a lot of bands in the 80s and 90s that were in power pop bands that a lot, like,
the Posies.
Like Jellyfish was a good example, where they sort of, like, intellectualized
sure.
stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. Like, they intellectualize stuff in the same way that prog rock people do. All right, fine.
I have to drink a little bit more of wine out of this tiny little
enormous bottle of wine in your tiny glass.
My tiny little.
Okay, fine. I just want to say my name is Shane. You all are welcome for listening to a Nickelback record.
Oh my god!
Hi, Shane.
Yeah, our listenership just went down to like 9.
Bullshit.
Program gone wrong.
I'm gonna go look at some metrics next week, and I bet they go way the fuck up.
I think what happened is it. There's more of it, but now it's bejeweled. So
yeah, well, and it's being filleted apparently.
Good God,
there's a lot of filletion.
Anyway, that said, this has been Somebody Likes It for another week. I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
I'm Mark.
We'll see you.